volume, high risk, high, like very important for our tourist economy and our economy in general area. How hard do you think they're working in Winter Hill? Like, that is scary.
Now, here's what I'll say about Phoebe.
What do you say about Phoebe? She lives in Quincy now. She's totally fine.
I know. But when she was living there, the solution to that problem is not
don't go on the fire escape.
The solution to that problem is you call Boston Inspectional Services and say, I think my fire escape is falling apart. Please send someone over to look at it.
We were in our mid-20s and she was getting a break on rent. So I think she just didn't want to rustle any feathers.
Even then, ruffle feathers.
Ruffle, not rustle.
Because if there is a fire and you have to use that fire escape and the fire escape falls off the building, you're not going to be happy. You may not be around to be unhappy.
Yeah.
If you live in a building and you are concerned about the fire escape, call Boston Inspectional Services. Call the mayor's office, which I think is what, 411 is their number? No, 411
is
information. 411
is information. 311.
311. Call 311 in the city of Boston. Call the mayor's office.
Call 411. Say, can I talk to the mayor? Mayor?
Call 311. Call the mayor's office and say, look, I'm worried about my fire escape. Who do I talk to? They will route you through to the right people. And they will send someone over.
I would say, and chances are, well, and the fringe benefit of that, is that once they get alerted about one person not doing their job in that respect, or one building not being inspected properly, chances are that whoever's job that is that they're slacking at, they're going to have eyes on them very, very closely, and they're going to be like, shoot, we should probably go around and fix every single building that this is an issue with.
Yeah.
Or at least inspect every single building that this potentially is an issue with.
If you walk in the city of Boston and you see fire escapes overhead, call 311 and say, you know what, I'm concerned about these fire escapes. So somebody go take a look at that, because they don't look right.
Yeah.
Make them do their jobs, because clearly they haven't been.
I would say, well, and even thinking about the terrible last apartment I had in Somerville, the woman who owned the building was basically renting, it was a four family, basically renting it under the table. And I lived on the third floor. There was not a second exit in case of a fire. Like, if there was a fire, I was just screwed. I did have one of those like stupid hang out the window ladder things, but God knows the building was falling apart so much. The chances are if I put one of those ladders on the edge of my windowsill, the windowsill would have just broken off.
Surprisingly, the windowsills are usually the last thing that's going to go. Believe it or not. Those are usually the last thing that will go.
Well, then I'd be hanging off a windowsill to no building below me.
Yeah.
but no, I mean, that is, and it's, God, it makes me feel like an old woman talking about it, but I think about both of my grandfathers who would complain. No one takes a sense of pride in their work anymore. Like, my grandpa Pop had a friend who was the manager of a lot of buildings in the Dorchester area, and he would talk about how impressed he was that this guy, like, every day would go check every single building to make sure that everything was perfect. And now everyone's just like, oh, what's the least amount of work I can do and still make money?
If you own...
There's no sense of pride and property that people own anymore. It's all about dollar signs and green.
Well, one of the problems that you have is you have landlords who are stretched way thinner than they should be. They own all this property.
They own like 17 buildings.
They have no idea what's going on with them. But this is one of those things that if you're a property owner, unless somebody is calling you or knocking on your door and saying, hey, what's up with your fire escapes, you don't think about them. You don't really think a lot about, and I mean,
because how often does a fire really happen? That's like a it'll probably be fine kind of situation.
Every 5 years, think about it, every 5 years you've got to go to inspectional services and get a new certificate for your fire escape. That's how safe everybody thinks. That's how much people don't think about them. You know, is even the city is like, it takes 5 years for anything really to happen to one of those things. Well, you know what? It apparently now has been 30 years since these were inspected. And I guarantee you, these aren't the only ones in the city that have problems. They're all over the place. If these exist, others exist, and they probably exist in other communities too. This is one of those situations where you, individual citizen, have to get involved. You have to pick up the phone and you have to say, look, I'm concerned about my fire escape. Call 311 to talk to the mayor of the city of Boston. Call your local police department if you don't know who to talk to. Mm. You know, you can call the local fire department And it's like firemen, like when they're not out chasing fires around, they're happy to talk to you.
Yeah.
They're happy to help out. If you call up your local fire department, you say, I'm worried about the fire escape in my building, they will send somebody over.
Yeah, I was going to say, because that's the thing is that with in mind, like that I just said, like how often do fires really happen? With that in mind, I mean, I grew up, one of my best friends growing up, her dad was a fireman. And, you know, they do 72 hours on, 72 hours off. And most of the time, they're just hanging out.
Yeah.
So, like, they're hanging out making chili and stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, there, a lot of them would welcome the opportunity to, like, hey, something for me to do because nothing's on fire right now.
Yeah.
So it is, it's true. I mean, and you have to remember, I mean, so many people complain about taxes and especially libertarians, which I straddle that fence. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. But like so many people complain about taxes and forget that part of what comes with paying taxes is that you have every right to call your local fire department and be like, hey, guy whose paycheck I pay,
yeah,
want to come check this out? Like, and that's the same, you know, it's with the fire department, with the police department, with the public works, with all of this. This is all, these are all things that, like, that's what your taxes are going towards. And you are well within your rights as a citizen of each town, state, this country, to utilize that, and to make the most out of that.
And if you rent and you're worried about the landlord, don't worry about the landlord. You're actually doing the landlord a favor.
Yeah, because you're saving them a phone call and a showing up at the building, one of the 10 buildings they own that day.
Here's the thing. If they find defective fire escapes,
they are going to yell at the landlord.
They're going to yell at the landlord. But here's the thing. If someone gets hurt on one of those fire escapes,
that's even worse for
the landlord is going to have much bigger problems because their insurance may not cover that.
Yeah, because it's on them.
They may be liable for that if it's in disrepair.
Oh, trust me. My dad's a personal injury lawyer. Do you know how easy it is to pin anything that happens on the owner of any building?
Oh yeah.
Like I remember when I used to have parties in high school, the one time I got caught, sorry mom, I had like 50, but the one time I got caught, one of the biggest issues, my uncle is the one that broke it up. My uncle said to me, you know that if like someone tripped and fell down the stairs because they were drunk, your mom's liable because she owns this house. It's the same thing with if you own a building. If like the owner of that building, which I know they said it was the fire escape on Hemingway, but the building actually faces Boylston. They're liable for two people's hospital bills. And I've got news for you. When you sue somebody because of a personal injury, they're not just covering your hospital bills. There's this little thing called pain and suffering.
Yep.
And it's usually at least like 6 or 7 times the price of the hospital.
You better
bills.
Hope nobody suffered a brain injury because you're going to be
you're going to be paying them for the rest of and your life.
You may be looking at a 7-figure check that you have to write, and your insurance company is not going to be happy with you.
Nope. Nope, nope, nobody, nope, nope, nope.
I work with personal injury lawyers. I know the game.
I worked in that. I was a legal assistant for my dad.
Yeah.
And that's why I know about this because guess what? I was the one that letter that they send telling you how much you're being sued for.
Yeah.
I was the one that was sending that letter to you. And guess what? It wasn't just the bare minimum of their hospital bills.
No.
No, 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 no.
No, that's the minimum amount of what you're responsible for.
Yeah. And guess what? That's never what you pay.
Yeah.
Not even close. So do you want
WMFO Medford?
I do nice have one more local, but we can skip it if you'd like.
Is it a good local?
It's very good.
All right, give me a good local.
This I just found interesting because it's very rare that this happens in terms of the judicial system. So I don't know if you all remember back during the Bruins playoffs this spring, there were 4 men who violently attacked people at a Quincy MBTA station.
Yes.
The indictments charge, and this now has been handed over to the Norfolk County Grand Jury as of today. The indictments charge against Styles Bazima, who's 22, of Wrentham, Antonio Green, 31, of Agawam, and John Pertoni, 30, and Thomas Pertoni, 23, both of Norfolk. They've been charged with assault and battery, causing serious bodily injury, and assault and battery. And so this indictment was handed, or these indictments rather.
Mayhem? They didn't get it for mayhem?
I was surprised they didn't get mayhem because I really thought because it was an MBTA station and they were all in Bruins jerseys that would be handed forth.
I love it when they throw mayhem in there.
I know. It's just a fun word in general. But so this was handed up Wednesday. And this is why I really wanted to touch upon this case, because a lot of people, particularly in, I mean, I grew up in Quincy, so this is why this kind of hits, literally hits close to home.
Like a lot right of people, in the left cheek and then in the right eye.
Yeah, or down the stairs from my house. Yeah. But a lot of people don't realize that this is possible, and therefore are like, oh, I committed this crime in Quincy. What's the big freaking deal? I'll just go down the street to Quincy District Court and get my probation or whatever. The case officially today was transferred from Quincy District Court to Norfolk Superior Court.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, which is our county court, which, guess what? What other phrase can you think of that has the word county? Oh, jail. County jail. Yeah, so that can happen, kids. If it's a serious crime, you're not just going to hang out across from the fours. You are going to be going to a real big kids court. And they do that because they're basically saying, you really screwed up.
Yeah.
And you're facing an actual prison sentence. But the arraignments have not yet been set. But MBTA Police briefed again on the case today, where they're all wearing Bruins apparel when they attacked two people in the North Quincy T station shortly after game one of the Eastern Conference Finals. And they said they appeared to have been at the game, and by that they mean they were wearing Bruins jerseys and they were wasted.
Yeah.
One of the victims received 10 stitches near his left eye, and the bone across the bone around his eye was broken. By the way, I've gotten a hairline fracture on my orbital. It does not tickle. The other victim was left with a concussion. But after the attack, the MBTA Transit Police released the surveillance images of five people who they said were wanted for questioning. One man in one of the pictures actually turned himself in to the MBTA police headquarters in Boston and identified his four friends, saying he wasn't involved in the fight. And, you know, that he was like, you know, like, obviously, you're going to find us, so I might as well make this easy. But the other four men who have been indicted later ended up turning themselves in once their friend was like, dude, like, they're going to find you.
Doesn't he know that snitches get stitches?
Right? I was going to say, I don't think he's their friend anymore.
Yeah.
One of the victims...
He's going to be popping up in Quincy Memorial one of these nights with multiple stab wounds.
Yeah, being like, I don't know what happened. This is the part that shocked me the least about this story. One of the victims said that a man that he later identified as Bazima, who's the 22-year-old, the youngest of the group of them, was the one that started the confrontation. And the police said the surveillance video confirmed this with... Thomas Pertoni, the second youngest of the four men, being the second to throw punches. So, yeah, I basically think that this is a recommendation for, I'm 33 years old, the other two guys were 30 and 31. Hey guys, maybe don't hang out with your little brother and his friends. That's probably a decent idea. Or at least wait until they're like 26 and learn to handle alcohol.
There's a couple of things here. Number one, don't. If you're going to curb stomp somebody outside of a bar, okay, that's one thing. That
don't
happens.
Do it in a place that's super surveyed.
Don't do it. Well, let me get to that in a second. Don't do it on the MBTA.
Yeah.
You can't go beat up randos on the T because the state is not going to have it. The state is not going to put up with it. The MBTA has enough problems without hoodlums beating people up at its train stations. You are going to suffer the full consequence and wrath of the law if you're dumb enough to do this. Number two, general rule of thumb, don't commit crimes on the T. Have you noticed a trend in the news lately? Anybody who's committed any sort of a crime associated with the MBTA has been arrested, because the MBTA has very robust surveillance all over the place.
Yeah, basically look at any upper corner when next time you're at the T. Just look upwards. Look at the ceiling towards where it meets the wall. You're going to see a camera.
Yeah.
Every single corner that you look at, there is no blind spot in a T station.
Those cameras aren't fake.
They were very, very, very strategically placed.
They're
so
really
that they
good.
Could catch freaking everything. They're wide angle lenses.
If you
so basically they'll see the back of your head, the side of your head,
yeah.
The front of your head, the other side of your head. You're everywhere.
If you commit a crime on the T Tuesday morning, your picture will be on every local news station by Tuesday evening. Guaranteed.
Yep.
Okay? That's just the way it goes. don't commit crimes on the tape.
Dum-dums.
Go do your crimes somewhere else. Even better, don't do your crimes at all. But I know, you know, some of you out there,
it's the Bruins. Just,
it's what you're going to do. It's what you're going to do.
Yeah. It's like, well, that's what kills me the most about this. And again, just don't do stuff like this.
Yeah.
But I don't know how familiar everyone is with the area around TD Bank North Garden, which I still like to call a Boston Garden because I like it better. But you're right on the edge of the North End. Do you know how many random alleyways that are completely clandestine and no one will ever even notice you're in, let alone beating the crap out of somebody in? You really need to beat the crap out of somebody, do it there.
Yeah.
Don't do it in a place that has multiple police forces at its helm. Like,
don't commit crimes on the
team. If you're going to be stupid, be smart stupid.
Don't commit crimes on Boston Common or the Public Garden. Because the mayor will come after you.
Don't commit crimes in Government Center.
Don't commit crimes in Government Center. Don't commit crimes in Faneuil Hall.
Don't commit, apparently, due to in reference to the story that we topped off with tonight, don't commit crimes along the Esplanade or Memorial Drive.
Don't commit crimes in the Theater District. Downtown Crossing may still be an open sort of, you know.
Yeah, stand behind one of those big pillars and you might be okay.
Downtown Crossing, I think you might still be able to get away with some stuff. But, yeah, don't commit crimes in Boston. Is really it? I had a friend years ago who was the crime reporter for the Boston Herald, and he used to say, "Murdering somebody in Boston is the stupidest thing you can possibly do because you're going to get caught in about 2 weeks."
Yep.
Everybody in Boston knows who everybody is.
Yeah. Well, and especially because we're such a neighborhood-centric city.
Yeah.
Like it's a matter of like, okay, somebody from North End probably doesn't know somebody from Southie, but if I meet somebody from Southie and then I say to one of my friends from Southie, hey, do you know Sully? Which Sully? The one that lives on H Street. Oh yeah, I know that Sully. Yeah. There's 14 Sullys. They know which each one is.
Yeah.
Like
everybody knows everybody.
We're a small enough city that you're not getting away with anything.
Even with these snitches get stitches and code of silence in certain parts of the city, the cops are still cracking those cases open. You murder somebody, you're going to jail. And usually what happens is you murder somebody in Boston, you leave town, and then they arrest you in South Carolina or Florida or Texas or whatever part of the Ohio, whatever part of the country you went to about within 18 months. That's about how much time you got to go be on the lam, wherever you're going to go be on the lam. Don't do it. This is a stupid place to try and commit crimes. Other than vagrancy, which is tolerated. I think you can get away with a lot of petty theft around here. But violent crime, city is not having it.
Ay, ay, ay. Yeah, I mean, well, and especially because, like, I hate, obviously, this is not the only source of violent crime in our city, but especially since we got Whitey, it's like, okay, we caught, like, the number one culprit for any violence that anyone outside of Boston, like, relates to Boston, short of stupid Southie Dorchester bar fights.
Yeah, well, remember
drunk Irish people.
Remember the reason that Whitey
and drug fueled ones in Roxbury and Mattapan.
The reason Whitey got away with it, kids, was he was being protected by corrupt FBI agents.
Yeah, yeah. Remember our beloved Robin Hood was actually screwing everyone else over. But I think, again, because we're in New York, it's like, yeah, stuff's going to happen. It's a huge city, whatever. In Boston, like you said, we're a small enough city that it's like someone's face gets put on the news. Someone knows them really well. Like a lot of people know them really well. Anyone in their neighborhood, at least, is like, yeah, I stand behind that guy in line at Dunkin' Donuts every morning. If you come to this Dunkin' Donuts around 9:15, he's going to be there. Like, people are so stupid. Not you guys. You guys are great.
Our listeners are the not stupid people because
they're listening to us.
Yes. We're making sure that you know what's going on and what's worthwhile and what's important.
And
so,
most importantly, to not get into a fist fight at a T station.
Yeah. When we say don't commit crimes on the T, really, don't commit crimes on the T, kids. Bad idea.
Yep.
So the big story today, Robert Mueller wandered over to Capitol Hill and talked to the House of Representatives. Told them ahead of time, I'm not going to say anything beyond the report. And I think, having listened to a lot of this on the radio, and I know some people are watching it online or wherever you happen to be, you could almost call it a performance piece that we got today on Capitol Hill. If I was going to give it a title, it would be Selected Readings from the Mueller Report, by the U.S. House of Representatives, accompanied by occasional grunting from the author. Because that's pretty much what it was. Bill Mueller was like Bill Belichick at a press conference. Uh-huh, yeah, correct. Beyond my purview.
Yes.
Not going to speculate. That's pretty much what he said all day. From Vox. Now, Vox is not a legitimate news source. Vox is, in fact, a heavily, heavily biased news source. And I have chosen Vox for this piece.
I was just going to say, I was like, I'm dying to hear your reasoning because, behind using that.
Because Vox is over. They're the left of the left. They're the Antifa supporting progressive
Antifa.
Side of things on the internet. So if they're giving it a bad review.
That's telling.
This is a little bit like one of those Disney Access shills telling you that The Lion King is a bad movie, which apparently they all felt okay doing because apparently it's a bad movie. But this is from Vox, which should be favorable to the Democrats. Four takeaways from Robert Mueller's testimony. Special counsel Robert Mueller's testimony before Congress is over, and it wasn't the parade of fireworks and explosive new information some had hoped it would be. Instead, it was mostly Mueller providing a lot of repetitive one-word answers, Democrats trying to methodically lay out a case for impeachment, Republicans trying to deliver viral moments with a lot of yelling, and a whole lot of talk about how big of a threat Russia really was and still is. Mueller appeared before the House Judiciary and Intelligence Committees on Wednesday to discuss his two-year investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 election and potential obstruction of justice by President Donald Trump. And though he made clear in his opening statement that he would not go beyond the bounds of what was already in the report if called in to testify before Congress, House Democrats still brought him in for questioning. So here's Vox right off the top saying this was a bad idea. And remember, this isn't Fox with an F. This is Vox with a V. This is your side. This is your side, Democrats. Basically saying, what the heck you're doing?
Yeah, like basically it's like... If Big Bird talks smack about Sesame Street.
Yeah. So these are their four takeaways. I'm going to read pieces of this. Number one, Mueller came in with a plan and stuck to it. By our count, Mueller told lawmakers, and this was written after the morning session. This didn't include the afternoon. They added an update to it, but didn't rewrite the whole thing. So these numbers may be slightly off. By our count, Mueller told lawmakers their inquiry was outside his purview at least 8 times in the first session alone. He said a matter was in the report dozens of times. He answered questions with simply correct more times than we can count. He asked lawmakers to repeat their questions and answered slowly and concisely, if at times a bit bumblingly. To some, he came off as robotic and repetitive, which you could argue was the plan. Republicans and Democrats often came off as repetitive as well. I will agree with everything in that paragraph. I listened to it on the radio, and from what I heard, and hearing it and seeing it are often two very different things. Hearing it, he sounded like a confused old man.
Yeah.
And for anybody who listened to it on the radio, I think that's what you came away with, which is like, who's this old dude that can't remember anything and can't figure out how to answer these questions? Repetition isn't necessarily a bad thing, though. At the outset of the first hearing, Representative Jerry Nadler, chair of the Judiciary Committee, got Mueller to repeat what he had written in his report, that Trump had not been exonerated from obstruction of justice, contrary to the president's claims. It's a point that it behooves Democrats to hammer home, and they did, many times. In the second hearing, Representative Adam Schiff, chair of the House Intelligence Committee, tried to use Mueller's repetitiveness to his party's advantage. He got Mueller to respond in the affirmative that, yes, Russia had interfered in the election. Yes, the Trump campaign had welcomed Russian outreach. And yes, Trump campaign officials had lied to try to cover up some of their misdeeds. Schiff closed the hearing in a similar manner, reiterating those points. Quote, we should hold our elected officials to a standard higher than mere avoidance of criminality, shouldn't we? If you listen to this or you watch this, you heard nobody is above the law over and over again from the Greek chorus of Democrats assembled on these two different committees.
I was going to say, pretty much every news source you look at has Democrats to Mueller. No one is above the law.
No one is above the law. Number two. Democrats tried to make the case for impeachment. It's unclear how successful they were. Well, maybe to Vox, but not to the rest of us. House Democrats came into Wednesday's hearings with a simple game plan. Have Mueller confirm what he wrote in his report in an effort to make the case for impeaching Trump. It led to many terse responses from the special counsel saying correct or true to many questions about Trump's conduct. The problem is that this hearing is more political theater than anything else. Vox, folks. Vox. V-O-X. This hearing is more political theater than anything else, which means the substance of what was said was in many ways less relevant than how it was said. And let's skip ahead on this. Republicans chose to attack Mueller personally and his investigation more broadly, occasionally reverting to conspiracy theory talking points. More on this in a minute. And because Mueller chose not to respond to anything outside the purview of the report, the broadsides on the special counsel landed harder than anything he said in response to Democratic questions.
If I hear the word purview one more time.
Worse, it seems Democrats didn't expect that this might happen. Quote, we are executing a solid game plan to walk the public through the facts of the report and make the case that if anyone else had done these things, they would have been indicted, a Democrat staffer told Vox during the hearing. The failure to anticipate Mueller's reticence may prove to have been a critical mistake. Vox. Number three. Republicans' strategy was to yell and generate a few good viral moments. Again, I'm not going to disagree with that. Many Republicans in Congress have long agreed with the president that the Mueller probe is nothing but a witch hunt, making that point over and over again, sometimes as loudly as possible, seemed to be the Republican strategy on Wednesday. One moment by Representative Louis Gohmert of Texas stands out. After questioning Mueller's integrity, he strongly defended Trump's criticism of the special counsel's probe and the president's conduct. But Republicans had an advantage. They knew Mueller didn't want to discuss anything not mentioned in the report. That gave conservatives an opening to ask about some of their pet conspiracy theories, such as that Mueller's staff was biased and wanted to charge Trump with a crime to avenge Hillary Clinton's loss. That paragraph I'm going to argue with. It is not a conspiracy theory to say that Peter Strzok and his girlfriend, Peter Strzok was working for Mueller's investigative team, sent text messages to each other saying, we're going to take Trump down and he's not going to be president of the United States. It is not a conspiracy theory to say that an unnamed attorney, known as attorney number two in the document, sent out a text message saying, Viva la Resistance. There were people who had conflicts of interest in this. There were people who had predisposed biases against the president involved in this. The Republicans are not engaging in conspiracy theory to point that out.
But here's the thing that makes this a bit muddled, this particular point, is that I definitely agree. That happened. That's not a conspiracy theory. Those are things that happened. But it's similar to, what's a good example to make my point? Okay, so I mentioned earlier, my father's a lawyer. He's also a human being. And so sometimes when he's outside the courtroom, he will have specific opinions just based on him being a human being in society and having opinions on things as all of us do. He goes into the courtroom, all of that is left behind.
Right.
All of that is put out of his mind because he goes into the courtroom and he's a lawyer first and foremost, and he does his job accordingly. He will not, like, say someone's suing someone else and his client, and Dad, I'm speaking hypothetically, so I'm not trying to throw any of your clients under the bus or say that you represent less than savory people, but
respect the NDAs.
But this is just for the sake of argument. Say, which I'm sure has happened with him and every lawyer. Say he has a client who's suing somebody. He thinks his client is a dirtbag.
Yeah.
And thinks that their case is completely taking advantage of the legal system. Again, Dad, everyone, I'm speaking hypothetically. He's still going to go into the courtroom and do his job just as well as if he totally supported this client's case and thought that he was an upstanding citizen that totally deserved to win.
Right. Well, it's
and the point I'm making is that even if in their private lives, a man talking to his girlfriend was like, we're never going to let him become president. If he's any semblance of a professional, which I like to give the benefit of a doubt that the majority of people are, if they've made it that high up, they're obviously doing something right, something to make themselves stand as a professional, as knowing how to behave in when they're in the capacity of doing their job. That doesn't mean that they're not allowed to privately with their girlfriend say, screw this dude. You know, do you understand what I'm saying?
I understand. Like, I understand what you're saying, but when you are looking at this in the context of an investigation, which is what this was, where somebody like Peter Strzok or this unnamed attorney may have the ability to present evidence in a way that is biased toward a certain outcome, you have to take text messages like that deadly seriously. And it wasn't just, this wasn't just a one-off. These two were having, as we know, Strzok was having an affair with this other FBI agent. They were having lengthy conversations about this.
And I'm not denying that. Again,
and how they were going to prevent Donald Trump from ever becoming president or finishing his term in office. One of the two.
But it's just like, I mean, it's, if that had, again, you have to, it's almost like a separation of church and state. I don't care if they wrote each other novels about it. It doesn't mean that the two intertwined. It doesn't mean that that was brought into the investigation, that that was brought into, because especially there's something to be said for the value, on the contrary of what you're saying, there's something to be said for the value of venting to prevent that from happening. Like, I mean, I think about, again, bringing my dad in as an example, I think about growing up, and again, this isn't about any specific client of his, I'm just speaking hypothetically for the sake of argument. Growing up, I would hear my father complain to my mother about cases that were really stressing him out, and things that he felt that were unfair that were happening. He'd never name names, obviously, NDAs and all of that, but things that were stressing him out. And when I worked for him, I would speak to him about the fact that I'd say, like, how, I'm not going to pretend that I don't, because I worked for him when I was in high school for a bit, and then after I graduated from college for a bit. And I said, I'm not going to pretend that I don't hear you when you're venting about cases. Like,
when are we going to get some voir dire in this damn state?
But, like, how do you, I said, how do you then go in the next day and fight for this person, or fight against something that you seem to be on the side? Like, how do you go in and do this? And he said, well, that's part of the value of venting, and of, and I think that this is the case here, that's part of the value of being able to privately be like, oh, because then you don't let out the when you're supposed to be acting like a professional.
But here's the thing.
When you're supposed to be doing your job regardless of personal bias. When you're supposed to be behaving objectively instead of subjectively.
But here's the thing. If you're doing it on your own time and nobody knows about it, that's fine. If you're sending text messages and you're leaving a paper trail, any reasonable jurist is going to look at that and say, you have biased people involved in this investigation.
But should that
everything that they were involved in is now suspect.
But should that, but my point is, I don't, while maybe it, I mean, not maybe, well, obviously it has been, it has become a factor. Should it?
Yes.
I disagree.
Yes.
I disagree, because I think that there's, like I said, it's almost like the separation of church and state. There's, which obviously, especially in the last 10, 20 years, has been a bit muddled. Or I guess always has been a bit muddled. It's just more noticeable now. But it's a matter of, I mean, it's a matter of, it depends on, it shouldn't matter. It shouldn't matter what the text messages said when they were between. They were a personal exchange of text messages between two people. It wasn't. They weren't tweeting this. They weren't putting it on Facebook. It was between two people. And unless it actually, unless there was actually something you could point and be like, hey, this is obviously a reflection of the thing that he said in that text message between him and one other person. Unless you can do that, then it's moot. It shouldn't come into play. It shouldn't be a factor. This is people looking for reasons to discredit people, for reasons to say, okay, well, we can't take them seriously because they had this private conversation that none of us were supposed to find out about what we did.
Robert, what happens when you go into a court for jury duty? and you were about to be impaneled on a jury.
Okay, yes. They ask, like, if the case involves marriage and you're like, marriage is stupid, right. I'm against it, then you're going to be dismissed.
Do you have, the basic question that they ask is, do you have any pre-existing biases or relationships with the parties in this case that would prevent you from rendering a fair and just verdict? And you're supposed to put your hand up and be like, yeah, that's my cousin. Hey, what's going on, Bobby? Hey, not guilty. Saying it over here right now, not guilty.
But see,
no. And you're going to get thrown out.
But see, that's muddled because the difference being that, okay, I could see that argument being made if the person in question had contributed to Hillary Clinton's campaign or was an outright, I'm shouting it from the rooftops, anti-Trump person. If he was so, because it's just, I mean, I don't know why this is the first thing that pops into my head. I always am kind of in the back of my head thinking of the OJ trial. But think about the jurors on the OJ trial. Over the course of that trial, and even before when they were being interviewed as jurors, there's a decent chance that they had one opinion or another about OJ Simpson. And that's just natural. He's much like Donald Trump. He was in the public eye for a long time.
Yep.
You're gonna have an opinion about him. But the ones that got dismissed were like the guy who worked for Hertz and had his picture taken with OJ and had met him personally. Somebody who outrightly said something negative about him publicly.
But here's,
like, there's a distinction between having a private opinion about somebody inside your brain and inside your intimate circle and being outright like, that dude sucks.
There,
like,
are situations.
They're two completely, two sides of a coin. They're two different coins.
There are situations where a case is so high profile and you have someone like OJ involved, where if you wanted to find a jury that lived up to the true standard that we set, which is you know nothing about the trial, you know nothing about the parties involved, you would never be able to have a jury trial.
That's what I'm saying. Well, that's my point, is that it's a matter of, like, what level of opinion
your only option
disqualify somebody.
Yeah, your only option if OJ's on trial.
In this, the day when news is 24/7, there's 5 million news sites that you can reference. There's billions of people spouting their opinion out. I bet a billion people just posted an opinion on Facebook as I began talking.
Your only option if OJ is on trial is to go call up that doctor that does awakenings and say, have you got 12 people
that have been in a coma for 30 years?
That you just pulled out of a 30-year coma. And are they lucid?
But that's my point, is that, I mean, to say that this person should be discredited because of a private conversation they said,
but
is the same as saying that somebody who had a text message being like, Trump's the best, I love him so much, he's my favorite president that's ever existed, saying that they have a biased opinion.
But here's the thing, okay? Here's your problem.
I have just one.
We're not talking about a jury trial where I am limited to whatever jurors I can find in a particular geographic area. Robert Mueller, for all practical purposes, I am exaggerating, but for all practical purposes, had a blank check from the Justice Department and the ability to interview and hire as many people as he needed, anyone that he needed. And apparently, in the vetting process, did not bother to find out if anybody had an anti-Trump bias, was a Hillary Clinton supporter, was a Hillary Clinton contributor, and didn't bother to look.
But,
and the whole reason we found out about the Peter Strzok thing is because somebody who was on the other side, who was doing their job correctly, leaked those text messages.
But I reiterate.
Someone on the other side, hang on. Someone on the other side said, I am an investigator. I see this investigator over here who has an overwhelming bias against this president, and I can prove it, and I'm uncomfortable with them being on this assignment. That person should not be here.
But I reiterate, okay, so he didn't vet if they were super anti-Trump, they were super pro-Hillary.
Should have happened.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G. With that in mind, did they vet if they were super pro-Trump, super anti-Hillary, super make America great again? it's, you can't.
Probably
you can't,
not.
Exactly.
If you didn't do it
point.
On one
it's
side, so, you didn't do it on the other.
Precisely. So who's to say that there isn't another person who has text messages saying, oh my God, I love Trump so much, that just happens to not get found and not get leaked. That's what I'm saying, is it's a level playing field. It just so happens that somebody, and mind you, somebody who's probably very pro-Trump and was searching for a reason to discredit this guy, dug and dug and dug so they could find something and be like, look, look, this guy hates Trump. Don't listen to anything he says. It could just have easily been somebody who's really anti-Trump finding somebody who had all these text messages saying he's the best president ever. Make
MAGA,
America
MAGA,
great
MAGA.
Again. Like, that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that I completely disagree with you, because within mind that it's very difficult to find any such thing.
Hang on.
And yes, he should have vetted everybody, but I'm saying it could have just as easily been the other side of it, like the other cheek, or however you'd like to put it.
We actually agree. There is a point of agreement here. We both agree that the vetting process was poor.
I'm sorry, I just blacked out for a second because you said that you and I agree with each other.
Yes. Okay, we may disagree on the specifics of whether or not someone with a bias could serve, but we do agree that the vetting process was insufficient.
On both sides.
On both sides.
Yes.
Whether you're pro-Trump, anti-Trump, Mueller didn't do a good job with that.
I was gonna say, I'm not saying they shouldn't have been vetted. I'm just saying that doesn't mean that doesn't mean that there isn't the opposite of this guy in question.
Exactly. Now, this is where the conspiracy theory...
Which lends to the concept of it, that it is a level playing field.
This is where the conspiracy theory point...
A vetted playing field, but a level one of that.
This is where the conspiracy theory point that Vox is making up starts to fall down. Because, there is actual fire to go along with this smoke. Now, if you know that they didn't vet properly so that you would get a good, unbiased group of investigators on this, when the Republicans then bring up the point of, why didn't you look into the Steele dossier? Why didn't you look into the founder of Fusion GPS, which was responsible for the Steele dossier? And one of the representatives asked this question. The founder of that company met with the Russian attorney who was at the heart of that June 11th meeting, where she came in and said she had dirt on Hillary Clinton, but then walked in and talked about adoption policy. The founder of Fusion GPS had dinner with her the night before that meeting and the night after that meeting. And this representative brings up the point, you wrote 14 pages and 3,500 words on that meeting, but you have nothing about her meetings with this opposition researcher from Fusion GPS. Why is that?
Yeah.
This is why Vox is writing this piece.
Yeah.
Because here's what the Democrats did. The Democrats won today. There's no question the Democrats won today because they got to throw red meat out to the base.
Yeah.
But the Democrats didn't win as much as the Republicans, who got a national platform to raise all of their objections with the Mueller investigation and with the scope of the Mueller investigation. So Republicans now not only have a whole new angle of attack on this thing, but a lot of people who didn't know about any of this stuff, moderates who were tuned in and paying attention to this, they now know about it. And they're now asking questions.
Yeah.
And Robert Mueller didn't refute a word of it. News was made today, and it was not good for the Democrats.
That's the thing, is it felt watching, and again, I was at school today, so I didn't have the opportunity to watch the entire thing, but it from reviewing it, it felt very akin to if you had to do a presentation in history class and you only like kind of half-ass researched it. Like, and you're kind of like, okay. And then if the teacher asks me something that I haven't prepared for, I'll just talk out of my butt or like try to move on really quickly. Like that's the way that this felt, is it felt like an unresearched junior year of high school history project. Or not even an unresearched, but a, but a unthoroughly researched.
I'll go
non-thoroughly, unthoroughly.
I'll go back to what Vox said. V-O-X, not Fox, Vox. Pro-Democrat. Because Mueller chose not to respond to anything outside the purview of the report, the broadsides on the special counsel landed harder than anything he said in response to Democratic questions. Worse, it seems Democrats didn't expect that this might happen. These are your cheerleaders. These are your people,
will
Democrats.
You stop lumping me with Democrats.
No,
the Democrat Party is...
No, I don't mean you personally. This is the rhetorical you.
Oh, you're saying like the you, the greater you.
The Democrats.
I'm going to say, I'm an independent, son.
These are your cheerleaders telling you you did it wrong. And you did. Mm-hmm. And we'll see how this plays out. But
I have a feeling the answer is going to be not well.
Tends to be another net win for Donald Trump. He just wins and wins
by
and wins.
Doing nothing. That's the thing. It's like his biggest triumphs are when he just keeps his mouth shut and lets someone else screw up for a change.
I made this point last week and I will reiterate it right now. Donald Trump could dig a giant Burmese tiger trap in the middle of Pennsylvania Avenue. Put signs all around it that say, trap, danger, we'll kill you. And the Democrats would still walk right into it. You have to, and the only way that the Democrats are going to win, the only way that you're going to win, is if you put out realistic solutions to things. Give us some ideas for how you're going to make the country better. And I'm going to tell you right now, it ain't reparations, because that's not going to happen. It's not paying off people's student loans, because that's not going to happen. It's not universal single-payer health care, because that's not going to happen. Give us some realistic ideas for how you're going to make the country better and stay focused on that. Ignore the man who is tweeting from 1600 Pennsylvania, and you will stand a chance in 2020. Short of that, 4 more years. Yeah, I know. It could be worse, but I would prefer to have somebody else in the White House. I'm not allowed to say that technically on the air here, but we could do better. I'll say that. We could do better. But right now, I don't see a Democrat candidate who can win. I just don't. 855-915-9636. I have to acknowledge a passing. And I'm going to do it in the form of a YouTube clip, which is absolutely 100% completely appropriate for the loss of this actor, Rutger Hauer, who was appeared in a lot of movies, did a lot of different things, but will always be best known, I believe, for his role in 1982's Blade Runner, which is my favorite movie of all time. A lot of people's favorite movie of all time. One of the best science fiction films ever made. Partly because of Rutger Hauer's performance. And this moment at the very end. Rutger Hauer passed away earlier this week at the age of 75.
I've seen things you people wouldn't believe. Attack ships on fire off the shoulder of Orion. I watched sea beams glitter in the dark near the Tannhauser Gate. All those moments will be lost in time, like tears.
Hi, Now, this is James Brown, soul brother number one, always fighting. Now I'm fighting for your life. I'm fighting for your life because if you use drugs, you better leave it alone. Drugs are contagious. They're killers. Every drug is a killer. Stay away from drugs. Drugs will take your life away. And if you want to live, stay away from drugs. Because they are super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad.
Okay, gang, so chances are there'll never be an emergency ever, ever again.
Mm-hmm.
But just in case, let's talk about a plan.
Okay.
So who's going to do what? Anyone?
Yeah,
okay, perfect. We'll figure it out as we go. So who is going to grab the go bag?
What's a go bag? It is a bag we do not have that is filled with things we really, really need in an emergency.
Guess we won't have to worry about it then.
Ah, good point. So, we all know who to call if something happens then, right?
I'd have to call Jill, Devin, Melissa, Karen, and Bruce.
And I will try to call all of you, but Greg doesn't have a cell phone. Dad's phone will have a dead battery.
No doubt.
And Julie will be on the phone with Jill, Devin, Melissa, Karen, and Bruce.
Well, this is great. I am so glad that we don't have a plan.
I know.
Winging It is not an emergency plan. Make sure your kids know what to do during an emergency, who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information. A public service announcement brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of a team. Everything is awesome when we're living our dream.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. We're wrapping things up here at The Big Picture. I am Chase Spillane. With me, as always, is Derek Gary. But before we go, we want to tell you the coolest things from the last and coming week and the weirdest things from the last and coming week. Or I guess just the last week. But first, the coolest things. This one goes out to all my Stewart aunts because they all love rosé. And I was looking at the Boston calendar and aunts Marilyn, Marla, Marissa, Marie, Marianne, and my mom. Yes, I'm not kidding. They're all named that.
So Catholic.
I know. They're all named after
so
Mary.
So very Catholic.
It's so gross and adorable at the same time. There is a Rosé and Raw Bar cruise this weekend, this Saturday. It's going out of Rose Wharf in Boston. Admission's $54. And it's an afternoon on the water. So this is from Sessions Rosé and Raw Bar. And it is the first, so it's $54 this Saturday. It's a tasting of 10 plus rosés from Martinietti Companies United and Carolina. And there's Smoked Tree Rosé, Chateau de Branco de Provence Emotion. I love that I know how to pronounce that. Edouan. They're the leading distributor of wines and spirits throughout New England and the seventh largest distributor in the United States. And then Atlanta Fish Company is going to be serving halibut ceviche, their chef selection of Cape Cod oysters, a shrimp cocktail, all that good stuff. And they're thinking of making this a regular thing, but this weekend is the first one. They're going to test it, see how it goes. That's from 3 to 5 p.m. on Saturday, July 27th. Like I said, it's out of Rose Wharf, which is right on the harbor in downtown Boston. And if you want to get tickets, you can go to the Boston calendar, and it's one of the first things to pop up when you...
I'll tell you two things.
BostonCalendar.com.
Number one, if it's the first one that they're doing, the wine will flow more freely at this one than it ever will in the future.
Right? That's why I wanted to tell you guys about this one.
Number two... book a hotel at the dock because when you get off that boat drunk, you're not going anywhere else.
Nope.
You'll be lucky to make it to the hotel.
They have that's what's nice. Rose Wharf has probably 12 hotels in the immediate, in the stumbling vicinity, if you will.
Book your place to stay and hope that the boat crew will carry you to wherever you're going.
Yes. Stewart aunts. Get it.
Movie fans, if you like Quentin, if you can handle Quentin Tarantino movies, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood opens this weekend. And we did not get a 70 millimeter version of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood this time around. It's only showing in 5 places in the country. New York City is the closest place you're going to be able to see that. But the film was shot in 35 millimeter. We do have 2 venues where you can go and see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood as it was intended in 35 millimeter film. Glorious, glorious film. An opening weekend, if you're seeing film, is definitely the way to go because as those films run through the projector, they get a little scratched, they get a little beat up. They will never look better than during those first few screenings. So There are two places you can go and see this. Not surprisingly, the Somerville Theater, right down the street from us here at WMFO, in the heart of Davis Square. Somerville is one of those places you can see it. SomervilleTheater.com. SomervilleTheater.com for tickets and showtimes. If you are in the Brookline area, the Coolidge Corner Theater is also going to be showing it in 35mm. That is Coolidge.org. Coolidge.org. Go and check the showtimes. Make sure you are getting the 35mm presentation. I don't think either one of those film theaters is doing digital, but you never know. Sometimes there's digital and film are mixed. Look for the 35mm presentation. See the film as Quentin Tarantino intended you to see it. I saw The Hateful Eight in 70mm Cinerama when it came out a few years ago at the Somerville Theater, and I can tell you, it is one of the best movie-going experiences I've had this decade. Highly, highly, highly recommended. Go check it out in 35mm. If you can, Coolidge.org if you're in Brookline, SomervilleTheater.com if you are within walking distance of the sound of my voice.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. We're nearly through here at the Big Picture, but before we go, we're going to tell you the craziest thing that we found that has happened in the last week. For me, it's not in Florida, but it involves people from Florida.
Nice.
A nine-year-old Florida girl was injured after a bull bison charged her and sent her flying into the air at Yellowstone National Park on Monday. The unidentified girls with a group of people from Florida in the Old Faithful Geyser area of the park in Wyoming, all standing within 5 to 10 feet of the wild bison before the animal charged. Haley Dayton, 18, with the group, filmed the incident while she was visiting the park on the family road trip. She said, "My brother and I were looking at the hot springs. We saw a bunch of people running down the path to the bridge. We saw through the trees some people petting the bison super close. The group consisted of 50 to 60 people who were gathered near the bison for about 20 minutes before causing it to charge. The Park Service did not specify what the group did to cause the animal to charge, though they suspect it was the close proximity, which they explicitly warn against." Dayton said she was taking the video of the bison eating when it suddenly attacked the young girl. The Park Service said the girl was assessed and treated by park emergency medical providers and later taken to and released from the Old Faithful Clinic. The Park Service cautioned visitors once again that animals at Yellowstone are wild.
Yeah.
Durbarbs. And to stay at least 25 yards from bison, elk, deer, moose, and any other wild animal you would encounter.
Don't pet the bison.
Don't pet a wild animal.
Don't pet
the bison. I can't really stand on the high horse because I did pet a wild seal but I was like 7. My parents were watching my brother and sister because they were being stupid too. And its mom attacked me.
Yep.
So
don't pet the bison. Florida. Going on a river cruise? We have more Floridians on vacation here. Going on a river cruise, you may want to check the passenger list to make sure Lisa Ann Madison isn't on board. During a cruise on the Anclote River, the 58-year-old Madison, who witnesses said appeared intoxicated, grabbed a female passenger's buttocks several times in front of the other woman's husband and 6-year-old daughter. At one point, Madison said to the other woman, quote, "Oh, it's curved and nice, and I would do you." When the woman's husband asked Madison to stop, she replied with a patriotic quote, "You should go back to the country you came from." When police met Madison at the dock, she could not recall groping anybody, but she did recall telling the husband to go back where he came from. You can take the girl out of Florida.
But you can't take the stupid out of a person from Florida.
You can't take the Florida out of the girl. Don't.
I'm sure there are some smart people in, like, I don't know.
She strikes me as
Fort Lauderdale.
She strikes me as the type of person who could get a bison to charge.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you know? did she just get back from Yellowstone?
Yeah, it's like, what? Don't pet the bison. Like, how many times do we have to tell you
don't
pet the bison?
Don't poke the bear.
That is all the time we have for this week on the Talent Mikey D, coming your way in just a minute with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. We will be back next week as usual. Gonna be a nice weekend.
Yeah.
Get out.
I think I think I'm pilgrimaging out of Boston. I'm going to go to Leominster on Friday and then New York on Saturday.
Go see a Quentin Tarantino movie. Well, if you go to New York, you hate Quentin Tarantino, though.
I like Pulp Fiction. See, that's the thing. Is I hate Quentin Tarantino when he's like, hey, let's make a scene be black and white because otherwise it has to be rated X because I'm making blood gratuitously sports.
This movie is about
everywhere.
The Manson killings and it's showing in 70mm. In New York.
No, see, Melissa J. Catherine Spillane would like that.
Yeah, so go see that if you're in New York this weekend.
Word up.
Anyway, if you're in New York, go see it. If you're local, Somerville Theater, Coolidge Corner, that is all the time we have. Until next week, stay safe, everybody.
Love you.